Welcome to In Conversation With from the Lancet Global Health. My name is Nina Putness. Today we're talking to the authors of a paper
in our May 2023 issue, available now at www.thelancet.com. This paper looks at health financing in Indonesia and how this relates to universal health coverage, an incredibly important topic and top priority in global health. Who can access services and obtain financial support for health-related costs is an issue of major inequity across the world, with an estimated 7.3 billion people globally not having access to essential health services. Universal health coverage, or UHC, is an ethical and practical principle that seeks to resolve this major concern. It's often discussed in three dimensions: population coverage, so who is covered, which services are covered, and the proportion of the costs covered so that patients don't have to pay them directly. Each of these need to be appropriately and sufficiently addressed to ensure equitable health coverage for a population. UHC should mean that everyone has access to the full range of quality health services they need when and where they need them without financial hardship. This is not only an ethical principle, but it's also a practical challenge for every government. How to adequately and sustainably finance UHC is a question discussed across the world. Funding may come from a number of different sources, through general or specific taxation, or through social, private, or company insurance companies, or similar mechanisms. And it can be incredibly complex in many countries. Health is an investment requiring sustained national commitment and long-term plans with a focus on reducing the out-of-pocket costs by an individual and ensuring these are covered elsewhere. Politically, this can be a real challenge. Now, Indonesia is a country with approximately 278 million inhabitants and is an example of where national reform has been implemented, aiming to reduce these direct patient payments. In 2014, the National Health Insurance Scheme was introduced, consolidating many smaller health insurance programs. This became the biggest single-payer health insurance system in the world. This study reviews how the benefits and the burdens of this system were distributed across the population. This is a really important example with clear opportunities for global financing about health financing methods and UHC. Today, I'm talking to two authors from this paper. Dr. Augustina Sante is from the School of Population Health, University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Augustine is a health economist working in the health financing space in low and middle income countries. He's worked extensively in the Asia Pacific region and in sub-Saharan Africa. Professor Hasbullah Cebrani is from the Universitas Indonesia Center for Social Security Studies. He was the former dean of the School of Public Health and a professor of health policy and health economics of the Universitas Indonesia and current chairman of the Indonesian Health Economist Association. Hasbullah, Augustine, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about this paper.
Thank you, Nina.
So, of course, today, as I've said, we're talking about health financing and universal health coverage in Indonesia. Hasbullah, could you please start by giving us a little bit of background and context on health in Indonesia and elaborate on why this is such an important example of health financing reform?
Thank you, Nina. As you mentioned, Indonesia has more than 270 million people scattered across some 5,000 islands of more than 17,000 islands in Indonesia. Ensuring that everybody can access healthcare in such a context is very challenging, not only because of limited availability of health services, but also financial barriers that prevent people, especially the poor and most vulnerable, from accessing the available services. The National Health Insurance Scheme was introduced in 2014, integrating all social health insurance and social assistance programs, aimed to remove the financial barrier for those people to accessing health services and to expand coverage in line with the universal health coverage agenda. There is currently over 252 million Indonesians, or about 90% of the population, who are members or enrolled covered by the National Health Insurance Scheme. Members are categorized into two main groups, non-contributory and contributory members. The non-contributory members are about 59% of the total membership in March 2023, and mainly consists of poor people and low-income people who are identified by the government that need financial assistance, and they are subsidized by the government. The contributory members are those who are employed and contribute 5% of their monthly salary. And also those who are self-employed and their family who pay nominal monthly contribution. There are very small portion of people who are not employed and their family whose contribution mainly taken from their pension income. For us, Indonesia, the National Health Insurance Scheme is an important reform because without it, many people will find it difficult to use health services. It has made it is somewhat easier now for more than 250 million people to access healthcare services when they need it, without fearing of not being able to pay or financial hardship for them.
Thank you, Hasbullah. So this is very important. You mentioned that this new National Health Insurance Scheme, so it was launched in 2014, now, or in March 2023, covers 90% of the population, which is very impressive. But could you explain perhaps why this isn't 100%? And maybe any other challenges that this or other similar schemes might encounter?
Yeah, you're right. The aim is to cover everyone, the entire population, or 100% of the population. It is targeted to be achieved by 2024 by our government. But this has not been achieved due to some middle income and non-wages earner or the informal sector who are not eligible for a government subsidy, yet they feel they still can afford healthcare because they are relatively young and healthy, and they prefer to pay healthcare out of their pocket at this time. So they are not enrolled. But this is about 10% of the total population. So for them, there is no urgency to enroll at this time, but the government keep informing and requesting them to enroll. Aside from not 100% coverage, our national insurance scheme is facing the following problem. One, there is uneven geographical distribution of health infrastructure and human resources, especially medical specialists. People living in area without adequate infrastructure and without adequate personnel might find it is less attractive to enroll into National Health Insurance Scheme because they are afraid not getting the services anyway after paying contribution. Especially for the services they can afford paying out of their pocket. Second, the National Health Insurance Scheme has stimulated growth in medical services and even the economy, but mainly in the urban centers, not in rural areas. So for some people in rural areas might not be thinking fruitful benefit to enroll at this time. Third, there are uneven distribution of personnel and facilities that affecting quality of health services. For example, a small number of qualified midwives in the least populated and least developed regions of Papua province has been linked to the lower antenatal care attendance for pregnant women than in Bali or in Java. So we have some challenges how to improve availability and quality of human resources, especially midwives, doctors, and specialists. Finally, some members of the national insurance scheme still incur out-of-pocket costs for accessing health services due to low reimbursement in our healthcare facility or healthcare providers contacted by the national health insurance. And there is some cost, especially transportation costs, that quite significant for those people in a remote area. This potentially discourages enrollment that the system must address. There are some other challenges that directly or indirectly impacted our enrollment at this time, but we are working on it to do the best to achieve universal health coverage by 2024.
Hasbullah, thank you for this really useful summary. Augustine, if I could perhaps turn to you now and talk about your specific research published this month in the Lancet Global Health. So you conducted two analyses specifically to assess equity. Could you describe these to us, explain why you've used these specific metrics, and perhaps explain why looking at equity is so important in this case?
Yes, thank you, Nina. We conducted two analyses to assess the equity of the Indonesian health financing system, benefit incidence analysis and financing incidence analysis. In the benefits incidence analysis, we measured the extent to which different socioeconomic groups benefit from government health spending through their use of health services. For the financing incidence analysis, we evaluated the distribution of the burden of healthcare payments across various socioeconomic groups and assessed the degree to which this burden is proportionate with income. So in a sense, we try to provide a more comprehensive picture of health financing equity in Indonesia by using these two analytical techniques. In both analyses, we compared the distribution for 2018 and 2019. Now, these analyses are very important, as they shed light on how equitable the current health financing arrangement is. I think you would agree with me that equity in healthcare distribution and payment is critical if we are to achieve the goal of universal health coverage. We know, for example, that millions of people worldwide cannot access the health services they need, and millions more are pushed into poverty every year by high out-of-pocket health expenditure. Governments need evidence from evaluations like this to reform their health financing systems as they chart a new path towards universal health coverage.
And Augustine, what did these analyses show you, and why is this so important for people living in Indonesia, especially those living in poverty or poorer people? What's the real impact of this health financing?
The results show that Indonesia has made substantial progress in expanding healthcare coverage, but a lot remains to be done to improve equity in health financing. For example, we found that the distribution of healthcare benefits in public facilities were marginally poor in 2018 and became even more so in 2019. What I mean by poor is that the distribution favored the poor more than the rich. Improvements in access to health centers and expansion in the supply of services in general contributed significantly to the poor distribution of benefits in the public sector. Apart from health centers, benefits from the use of public hospital outpatient departments shifted from being significantly pro-rich in 2018 to pro-poor in 2019, which further underscores the progress being made. So that is for the public sector. In the private sector, the story was quite different. We found the distribution to be significantly pro-rich across all private facilities. And this was high enough to offset the poor distribution in the public sector and made the overall distribution of healthcare benefits in Indonesia pro-rich in both 2018 and 2019. With regards to the distribution of the burden of healthcare payments, which our other analysis looked at, we found that not only do the poor in Indonesia benefit less from public spending on healthcare, they also bear a higher burden of healthcare payment relative to ability to pay. The overall health financing incidence was regressive in both 2018 and 2019, although the regressivity reduced slightly in 2019. So these are some of the findings from our study.
Thank you. This is really, really important and has huge potential impacts on people's lives and livelihoods. What are some of your suggestions about what could happen more to protect those most in need?
Our study makes several recommendations. For example, we recommend that the government, the National Health Insurance Scheme, should prioritize investment and budget allocation for primary health care. Because in the past, that were less invested. Between 2014 and 2016, almost 80% of the National Health Insurance Fund was spent on secondary and tertiary services. Such investment is likely to further protect the most in need. There is evidence we learned from Thailand that demonstrates that adequate financing on primary healthcare contributes to poor benefit incidence. We also recommend that the government review the current Indonesian case-based group tariff to ensure that they reflect the true cost of services that delivered by the healthcare providers and incentivize more private participation in the delivery of quality healthcare, especially in rural areas. We don't believe that the current tariff reflects the true cost of providing healthcare in Indonesia at the moment, and therefore it might jeopardize the quality of healthcare. Another key recommendation we make is that the maximum payroll cap of 20 million Indonesian rupiah for contributory contribution or premium should be removed to make financing incidents more progressive. The current payroll cap means that people with high income have an unfair advantage over people with low income, as any amount they earn over 12 million Indonesian rupiah is not part of the National Health Insurance payroll contribution. Removing the salary cap will generate additional revenue and help the National Health Insurance collect more money and make sure more equitable health financing for all.
Thank you, Hasbullah. Some important recommendations there. If we now also open this back out to the rest of the world, what can other countries and other governments learn from this Indonesian example? How best to provide health coverage for all?
Well, the Indonesian effort to deliver health care to all its citizens is globally recognized as one of the most ambitious universal health coverage reforms undertaken by a low-income or middle-income country in recent years. And there are many lessons in it for other countries. We are talking about 278 million people scattered across some 17,000 islands. The courage to tackle this challenging reform by trying to provide universal health coverage in such context alone is an important lesson for other countries. 278 million people in a harsh geographical terrain. No country has an excuse anymore not to pursue universal health coverage if it can be done in Indonesia. Furthermore, the challenges confronting the Indonesian health financing system following the implementation of the National Health Insurance Scheme may also provide valuable lessons for other countries. The issues around sustainability of the scheme, actions to encourage more informal sector enrollments, and efforts to fully bring the private sector on board. These are all very important for countries seeking to develop their own comprehensive national health insurance schemes. So there are important lessons to learn from the Indonesian experience by the rest of the world.
We're going to end on that strong message to other countries about the importance of universal health coverage and learning from the Indonesian and other examples. Hasbullah Augustin, thank you so much for joining us on air today and talking about this.
Thank you very much, Nina, for having us.
Thank you, Nina. Great. Thank you very much. I'll send you the record soon.
So you can read more about Hasbullah Augustin and their co-authors' research online now at thelancet.com under the Lancet Global Health. Thanks again to both of you for taking the time and talking to me today. And thank you also to our listeners for tuning into this episode of In Conversation with The Lancet Global Health. Remember, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you usually get your podcasts.